So as I mentioned, we're going through this Faith Hall of Fame again, and this week we're looking at Moses. So you might have heard of Moses before or seen some of these stories. So the passage that we're looking at in Hebrews, and then we'll actually go through the story of Moses after. The passage we're looking at in Hebrews chapter 11 goes like this. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child. And they were not afraid of the king's command. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing, rather, to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. Now, if you recall a couple of weeks ago, those of you who are here, we looked at Noah. All right, we looked at how he made a choice to build the ark as God had asked him to do, despite there being no signs of a flood or even likely that he'd never even seen rain before. All right, last week we looked at Andrew Chan. Right, Ken ran us through the life story of this man who is on death row in Indonesia. Okay, and just how he turned his life around and made a choice to follow Jesus and turn away from these things. And we'll talk a little bit later about how he's no longer afraid of death and on being on death row and is living quite a life of telling people about Jesus. So another, yeah, and so this is just another person from history and even recent history today who made some choices to follow God and not the world. Moses is the next one we're going to be looking at. So let's briefly tell the story of Moses just to get the picture, and then we can see why he was a man of faith. So we start out at this time. This is, for those of you, if you know some of the books of the Bible, this is right at the start of Exodus, so the second book in the Bible. So we're at a time in Egypt where the Israelites, okay, God's special people, they're being held captive in slavery by the Egyptians. Now, again, if you've heard some stories, you might have heard about Joseph and his brothers. At this point, Joseph had sort of been ruling over Egypt and, you know, it was prosperous and things like that. But within the space of a generation, everything's deteriorated and now, the Egyptians are sort of, ruling over the Israelites. So we come to a place where he says, you know, now there arose a new king over Egypt who didn't know about Joseph. All right. So didn't know about that history and how Joseph had really been a godly man who helped them get through a really tough time. All it took was a new king just to forget all the good stuff that had happened. All right, and he said to his people, the Egyptians, look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply and it happen in the event of war that they also join our enemies and fight against us and so go up out of the land. All right, so they're being used as forced labor. Okay, there's this fear of you know, the Israelites sort of rising up and taking over or, you know, leaving them, and they'd lose all their labor, and it could be devastating in a war, particularly because there were so many of them, right? So, you know, they're not being treated very well. You might have heard some of the story about Moses in the reed and things like that. So let's pick up where we're going with this. So the Israelites are growing in number very quickly, okay, and Pharaoh didn't like this, all right? Now, he gave a command that all the boys should be killed, but the girls could live. Okay, so then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Shiphrah and the name of the other was Puah. And he said, when you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. Okay, so we're in this case where all the boys to sort of cull the race are being killed off. Okay, and what Moses' mother does, when Moses' mother gives birth to him, she hides him for 3 months. Okay, she obviously doesn't want him to die, and we see, we won't go into it now, but the midwives are sort of complicit in this, and would kind of, Pharaoh would ask them, oh, didn't you kill them all? And they're like, oh, look, they give to birth too quickly. We try and make it there, but they've already given birth, and I don't know what happened after that. So they play a bit dumb to try and, you know, get some of these children to survive. So Moses' mother gives birth to him and hid him for about 3 months so that he wouldn't be killed. But after a while, obviously, baby becomes quite noticeable and cries a lot, that sort of thing. All right, grows in size, needs food, okay? And they couldn't hide him. So as you do, Moses' mother put him in a woven basket and sent him down the river. Now, There's some cultural things why this might have been important, but suffice it to say, I think he might have been she might have been hoping that someone would take mercy on him and raise him. Okay, now God had a plan here, and it turns out that none other but the daughter of the Pharaoh, okay, finds Moses and adopts him as her son. All right, now this is, we already said that one, didn't we? Okay, all right, I thought I had that one up there. Now this is more significant than we perhaps first realize. All right, this isn't any old rags to riches tale. Being adopted as Pharaoh's grandson actually puts you in line for the throne. All right, so this is Pharaoh's daughter adopts a son. So at the very least, if not the most powerful person in the world at the time, he would have, at the very least, had all the riches and armies of the Egyptians at his command. All right, he could have become the most powerful person in the civilized world at the time. That's a pretty big step up, pretty big stepping stone. Now, when Moses gets a little older, he sort of turns his back on Pharaoh. Some things happen. He runs away. And he goes, feels very convicted, and he goes and spends some time with his people, the Israelites, where, you know, he natively come from, despite not knowing them. Okay. Now, he sees how they're being mistreated. Okay. He runs away for a short time, as I mentioned, but God actually calls him in a burning bush, if you've heard that story as well. Won't go to it into depth, but God calls him to free the Israelites. Right, he appears to them in this bush, and God tells Moses that he needs to go and confront Pharaoh and tell him to let the Israelites go. Now you can imagine, you say that to Moses, so Pharaoh's not very happy that Moses ran away. Moses not exactly in Pharaoh's good books at the moment, and God just says, "Oh, look, I just want you to go to the most powerful person in the world at the moment, all right?" So you can call it a president or whatever, you know, the highest person. I'll just say that he needs to let these people go. All right, so you can imagine this is a little bit tough, because this is not like, oh yeah, okay, I'll just go ask him and see what he says. Like, this is a pretty serious sort of thing. Again, he's not in Pharaoh's good books, but this is the president of the universe at this point, right? Well, not the universe, of the world. Okay, so this is a pretty powerful person. So what did Moses do? Okay, what decision did he make? You know, he had this choice of the creator, the God of the universe, is asking him to go and free his special chosen people. All right, he's asking Moses to give up a life of potential riches, because perhaps he could have gone back and begged forgiveness to Pharaoh and come back in his graces. God is asking him to give all this up, all the riches and power, to serve him. All right, that's a pretty big choice. Now we see that Moses chose to suffer affliction. He chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Right now, for Moses, there was something that he saw that made him give up all the riches this world could possibly offer him to serve God. For Noah, he endured the ridicule of those around him by building that ginormous boat despite there being no rain to serve God. For Andrew Chan, he can now say that he has no fear of death, and that his only regret would be that he can't serve God on this earth anymore. What is it that makes these people choose God over the world? Like, when you look at it on face value, it doesn't make any sense. All right? It doesn't add up. Why did Moses make this choice? Okay? It's positively ridiculous when you think about it. All right? Moses, we get from when you read more of the story of Moses, he's not some valiant guy who's bound by some internal code of honor that we see in movies these days. He wasn't a guy like that, right? He had plenty of bad things about him, plenty of character flaws, you know. It's not just him going, all right, this is a noble thing, I'm going to do this, you know, to make myself feel good or to meet my own internal code of honor. He's not like that. But there's something that all of these people, Noah, Moses, Andrew Chan, the examples we've been looking at, there's something that they realize that completely changed their life, all right? And what we're going to try and fish into and look into is what exactly is that thing that made them give up the really obvious things for something like the hardship and following Christ. The passage tonight tells us why he did it. Now, verse 26 is in a different translation here. It says, he thought it was better to suffer for the sake of Christ than to own the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking ahead to his great reward. Now, God had promised Moses and the Israelites a great reward. He had promised to take them out of Egypt and bring them to a land of rest. He says, "So I," this is God speaking, "have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from the land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey." All right? This is a land that was fertile and spacious, right, where they could live as God's own people without being persecuted. Now Moses looked forward to this reward of this land of rest, okay, and in faith he made the choice to do what God asked. So Moses went from being the helpless baby of a parent suffering under the Egyptian regime to being in line to becoming one of the most powerful men on the planet. And what did Moses do? He gave up the riches of Egypt for a promise. He chose to trust in God, his creator, and the purposes of God that he had, that God had planned for his life. Now in faith, he took these promises that God had given him, the promised land, and this drove his whole life. Now this meant giving up the world, you know, in a literal sense. So he made a real personal sacrifice by giving up a potential life of riches and glory to suffer the life of his persecuted people. Moses thought it was better to suffer in the short term to identify with these people and to obey the Lord his God, no matter the personal cost to himself. That's a great story and all, but how does this apply to us today? So the promise that God made to Moses is still current today. He told them that he would rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt in their own special land, a land flowing with milk and honey, as the Bible puts it. The author of the book of Hebrews says in chapter 4, now, if Joshua, who was the person after Moses, who was sort of finishing off this mission of taking them to the promised land, now, if Joshua had succeeded in giving them this rest, this promised land, God would not have spoken about another day of rest still to come. So there is still a special rest waiting for the people of God. For all who have entered into God's rest have rested from their labors, just as God did after creating the world. So let us do our best to enter this rest. But if we disobey God, as the people of Israel did, we will fall. Let's take a break and talk about life for a second. Are you satisfied with life? Are you content? Before I became a Christian, I know that I wasn't. I know that death used to scare me. I think the injustices of the world used to irritate me. Everything was just so pointless and so meaningless. You know, I looked into many things, religions, things like that. I looked into science. And whilst there's interesting things, it just compounded the meaninglessness and the pointlessness. It just reiterated to me how little I actually mean and how pointless my whole existence is. And it's just a random thing that has happened. It's not something that really gives you a purpose and a mission and an excitement to live life, is it? You know, some people are so passionate about proving that there's nothing after the grave, right? Now, hopefully I'm passionate about telling you that there is something after the grave. So it strikes me as interesting how excited people get about telling you, don't worry, there is nothing else. As soon as you die, everything is meaningless and everything you do on life, here in life doesn't matter. And everyone goes, oh yeah, that's awesome. I'm so excited. I'm going to go out and just be pumped to live life. I don't think it really works that way. All right. This is the sort of thing that makes you go, really? What's the point? What about the thing? What about the hardships I'm enduring? What about how I'm really trying hard to not get irritated at that person? What about how I'm struggling in this job when, you know, someone said to me, oh, you know, if I did this bribe, I'd move further up my career and earn lots of money. And I said, look, I don't want to do that. You know, it's important to me that I keep to this moral standing. And then someone tells you it's all pointless and meaningless anyway. And don't worry, when you die, it's all just, you just disappear and nothing. Suddenly your decisions start changing. Suddenly you start saying, well, it's time for me to look out for number one. All right? What's stopping me from robbing a bank? I'm a pretty smart guy. I reckon I could do it and not get caught. What's to stop me from having everything I want on this earth? Really? Like, what is to stop me from taking what I want? You know, if this life is all there is, it's time to look out for me. But you know what stops me? This rest that we just read about. As a Christian, I now have meaning here on this earth. You know what? Life matters. How you live life matters. The choices that we make in life, they matter. Right? My Creator has given me meaning and purpose to life. He has pointed out that this freedom that I so enjoy to do what I want, to lust after what I want, to drink as much as I want, to consume as much as I want, this is actually slavery. Right? And if you're at church this morning, Ken was talking about this, like what I've realized and what my Creator has told me, and he's right, is I'm a slave to my desires, right? This is not freedom at all. This is not rest. Now, years ago, again, before I was a Christian, I know I longed for a rest from the slavery that I had to these desires. But I want to tell you that there is a rest from it all. Christ does promise an eternal rest, a rest like a life spent with my Creator that is full of meaning, right? That does have purpose, and that I will no longer be a slave to sin. Now Moses saw this. He said he chose to share the oppression of God's people instead of enjoying the fleeting pleasures of sin. He thought it was better to suffer for the sake of Christ than to own the treasures of Egypt. So the momentary sufferings that I might have in this world for not doing that you know, bribe or not compromising on the standards that God has told me to compromise. These sort of things, the suffering in this world that I have, you know, for Christ's name, compared to an eternal reward, this is nothing. It's far better to have this eternal reward than owning all the treasures of this world. Now, Moses got this. Noah got this. Andrew Chan understands this. And people around the world who call themselves Christians understand this. Now, just in case this rest sounds all nice and fluffy, it sounds like a nice place and all easy, you know, it's going to be a great place. But I want to make sure you understand that it came at a cost. Heaven is a great reward. It is more than we deserve. It is more than we can ever imagine. But it's a reward that's suitable to the price that was paid for it, which is the blood of Jesus Christ. Jesus gave his life for this promised land that we can enter. And this is the bottom line. This is what it all comes down to. This promised land, this rest, this heaven, this way that we can have a relationship with God again and be with our Creator, this cost Jesus his life. This cost the Son of God, who God sent down for us, it cost him his life. Do you want rest? Are you tired of the pain and the suffering of this world? Are you tired of the addiction? Tired of pointlessness of it all? Come and enter this rest. Join with those like Noah, like Andrew Chan, as we said before, like Moses, and those who call themselves Christians. Jesus wants you to turn your life away from these passing pleasures of sin and follow him. You can have rest. You can have peace. You can be satisfied. And you can have a purpose. You won't be disappointed. Now, there will certainly be trials in this life, but it is far better to suffer for the sake of Christ than to have all the riches of this world. If you are burdened by this life, do something about it. Jesus has promised a way to release that burden and have peace and rest. Now, if what I've said tonight sounds appealing, but you just can't grasp it, or it all sounds a little bit confusing, okay, come chat to someone after, right? I can attest to this rest, and I know others can as well, and would love to share it with you. Amen.